Recording is on.
All right. Welcome everyone to the VC API call, VC HTTP API call. We're still pending final resolution on the renaming. It is September 28th, 2021. On the agenda today, actually, you know what? I totally failed to pick a scribe. Is there anyone that could volunteer to scribe today before we get started? So let me see. Brian Richter, would you be able to scribe? Have you scribed recently?
Not recently, no. I've done it once, so do it again.
Okay. Yes, please. Thank you. All right. Today on the agenda, I'll go ahead and put it into chat channel there. And apologies, I don't have IRC up today, so if you slash me anything at IRC, I won't see it, for better or worse. The agenda is there. Today on the agenda, we have just this review, a description of the new data flow diagrams for the non-Chappy flow that Joe has been working on with Mike and Ori, Mike Prorock and Ori and a couple of other folks. We have pull request reviews, which really only one of them is still open. The others have been merged due to our new policy. And we have issue processing for the rest of the day. Are there any updates or changes to the agenda? Anything people would like to add or discuss today? All right. There's one thing I forgot. I am going to be in transit next Tuesday, maybe. And we should probably also start kind of passing around the baton in this group a bit more. I think Ori made that suggestion, and I think it's a good suggestion. So for next week, one of the code owners should take lead for running the call. So not me, I think. We'll need to decide that by the end of the call. In fact, let's talk about that right now. Is there one of the code owners that can run the call next week? Mike or Ori or I can help prep you and ready you to run the call. It's fairly easy. All you need to do is send the agenda out. I try to do it by Sunday night. Really, most of what we have to do now is just issue processing. We just need to go through issues. And so next call is probably going to be a pretty big focus on just issue processing and getting that moving forward. Let me pause there. Are any of the code owners available to run the call next Tuesday? So that would be Marcus, Mike Farley, Ori, or Mahmood.
This is Marcus. It's late for me, but I am theoretically available. I just haven't been too close to the whole authorization topic. But if it's issue processing, I could probably do it.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, Marcus. And then Ori, could you back up Marcus next week?
Yes, I will be here. I'm used to running these meetings. Thanks for volunteering, Marcus. We'll help keep you on track.
Awesome. All right. Great. Thank you very much.
So I'll send an agenda on Sunday, inspired by the previous agendas that you've been sending.
Sounds great. Okay. I might be able to make it, but it's very up in the air right now. Okay. Thank you very much, Marcus, for volunteering to do that. Yes, the template, you can just copy and paste the one that's sent out, should work just fine. And then focusing on issue processing should keep us going at a decent clip. Okay. So that's that item. The next item up, Michael Herman, since you're here, we resolved last week to rename the VC HTTP API to the VC API. I got the minutes out on Friday, which means the 7-day period basically started on Friday. I know that you had concerns about the way that vote happened regarding time zones. Now that there's a resolution on the books, I don't know if you want to elevate your concern or if you're okay with the rename for now. What are your thoughts there?
I'm okay with the rename. And just to clarify my request, it's to change the time zone to be something in the far west, either mm-hmm. Pacific, Alaska, or Hawaii. So just to be clear, so I don't have any issue. I don't have any issue with accepting the name change you're proposing.
Okay, great. That's good to know. And noted, we'll keep that in mind for any future poll. Since there was, a concern around the poll close time, this time around, we'll certainly try to make that change for future polls.
The Canadian election was settled when the Ontario polls closed this last week.
I think that's an important record to note, given the way some of this stuff works. So, yes, and I did just want to note for the record, the vote itself was not on the time zone issue, right? The vote was during the normal meeting, announced a mailing list, et cetera. But the informational poll that led to the vote was the one where time zone had not been announced. I just wanted to call that out explicitly on the record there.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. Okay. Well, let's take that back to the mailing list. Time zones are always, there's always a discussion around time zones because it's W3C and it's people all over the world. So, Hawaii might complain and then, folks in Japan and Australia might complain and all that kind of stuff. So,
use the dateline then.
We can do that. It's just the dateline then potentially splits. Well, let's take this to the mailing list. There is something that the group can agree to. There are only so many time zones, so we'll pick something that doesn't get objections from folks. I'm sure there's a choice there that we could go with. Okay, thank you, Michael. Noted. We will then, once this Friday hits, we will go ahead and pull the trigger to make all the name changes in the spec for the repo, the name of this channel, all that kind of stuff. That may be delayed until like mid-October to late October. I just want to make sure we don't change too many things and be disruptive by changing too many things at the same time. Okay, good. Hooray for all of us making a decision together. All right, next item up is your item, Joe. Eric, and a number of the community group members put together a new data flow diagram on a kind of a standard flow that the supply chain folks are working with when using the VC API. Joe, would you like to, let me go ahead and put that link in there. Joe, would you like to take us through that diagram in some amount of detail?
Yes, I would. I've got a new URL for folks.
Okay.
Which is the archive of the email I sent out, I don't know, an hour ago, half hour ago. Just some slight updates to that previous diagram. So I'm going to share screen and walk us through that. And I've already just in the last half hour realized there's a thing missing here, which I will get to. But let me introduce where we're at. And for those of you who have a sharp eye, there's a little pink corner of a thing down here. I'll pull that up later when we're ready to talk about it. So one thing to note right off the bat is each of the participants who are in a different trust boundary, or trust domain have different colors. And, it turns out they all have different colors. I didn't bother, recoloring the verifier and the holder. But all of the messages that cross between these boundaries must have some sort of, authorization mechanism. Now, in many cases, these different components are on the same system, often on the same server, and you could potentially convince yourself that there's a legitimate control that I only accept access from localhost. You know, that's a reasonable sort of way to address that. But the point being is that some mechanism has to verify, for example, how does the holder log into the holder app, right? How does the holder app log in or authenticate to the holder service? So we are not showing that in detail here, but you will see that we are identifying all the places where we need to talk about authorization. So that's sort of a setup of sort of where this gets us to that larger conversation about what authorization mechanisms we want to enable for different parts of this API. The other thing I want to note is this emerging definition that we've had for service and app. I think we've exposed a little bit already. And the idea, you know, in the first diagram we did, which was initially tracking the Chappie flow, although it was funny to me, Manu, that you thought maybe it wasn't. Maybe because it didn't do it in the same level of detail that you were expecting. But this distinction between the server, the app, and the role. And so to our model, the role defines the organization or entity who's behind that particular functionality. So the holder is a role. It's defined in the VC spec itself, as is the verifier, as is the issuer. Then there are a variety of different components that could be software or service. But we talk about the app and the service with a very specific distinction. The service is the software or service that provides a generic VC enabling capability. So it could be crypto, it could be keys, it could be formatting. And, the mental model here is this is often provided as software as a service. And in fact, that's why that distinction needed to be made here, because while many or some implementers are combining the app and the service, different implementers are making that split in different ways. And we had seen some confusion. For example, the supply chain folks were like, hey, we need this notify data ready on the verifier service. And it was when we realized in conversation with Mike and Ori that, oh, if we call it an app and we can come up with a definition of what does an app mean, then what's in the service, I think, is pretty clearly aligned with the legacy perspective that we've talked about here, that the service is the verifier service is the software as a service that's only answerable to the app, right? So if we look at the USCIS green card use case, the app was the mocked up USCIS website, which had the business rules and the logic, and it decided which current session is going to get which VC. But then it uses the issuer service in the back end to actually get that VC minted. But the holder never directly talks to that service. It was mediated through the app. So this is the general approach to the architecture between apps and services. And I think for that first version, and there was some confusion from it, we had conflated then the role and the app. So now we're just making those clear. The role and the app are different. We do have, as we started working through the Chappie flow to basically the same team with Mike and Ori and Eric, we started saying, okay, if we have these terms, let's go back to Chappie and see how that really works out. And Chappie has some interesting splits, because there's client-side code and then there's server-side code. And so we'll have some iterations to tease that through. But let me walk through, or let me say, I intend to walk through this and explain just in English what's happening here. Hey, Joe. Get to that, I was going to ask if there were any questions.
Yes, there's Michael's on the queue.
Yeah, so just harping on the word role. So a role is like a grouping or a label in most formal modeling languages. It's not something that's capable of doing actions. So if holder role could be changed like to holder actor, and similarly for the other one on the right side, if this is going to be a formal document, we should be using formal definitions.
All right, thanks, Michael. David Chadwick, you're up next.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. Yes, in the model we've got, we differentiate between the application layer and the VC layer. So the, when we talk about the app, that could be something like a browser on the mobile phone, or it could be some third party provided, you know, banking app or something, which talks to the holder app. So we have that in our model. And then at the relying party side, we have the service provider app, which is talking to the application app, and they would typically be talking with the OpenID Connect protocol. So they are not represented in this diagram, I don't think.
Okay. I would be happy to schedule a call with you to go over that, David. It's not clear to me if, like, the distinction about the app versus the app is just semantics we need to tease out, or if you're identifying a truly unique entity in here that we should bubble up and model. I would like to take that offline and just dive into you in it, which is basically what we did with Ori and Mike, which was say, hey, you guys are thinking about your app a little bit differently than it seems most of the rest of us are. So let's tease that out.
Okay, great. Let's do that, Joe. Thanks. Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, and let me respond to Mike Herman real good, if I could. Is that appropriate?
Please, you've got, not Mike on the, go ahead, Joe.
Okay, so we're using that term because it is in the VC data model spec itself. So in section 1.2, the ecosystem overview, the section describes the roles of the core actors and the relationships between them. A role is an abstraction that might be implemented in many different ways. The separation of roles suggested likely interfaces and protocols. The following roles are introduced in the specification. So we mean those roles quite specifically as defined in the specification.
Right. So I'm butting in. I realize that. So I don't disagree with the wording that you just used. It's defining the roles. But in this diagram, you need to depict an actor and indicate that it may be in one or more of those roles.
So we are indicating that this role is the actor. That's what it means when I say hold a role.
Okay, it's ambiguous. Go ahead.
I suppose I'm up next. I just wanted to ask, I wonder if it would simplify the diagram to take out the verifier storage service.
It would, but the storage service and the revocation service are both entities that I think are formally underrepresented right now. And so we don't say, how does anyone get the actual VC and where do they put it?
But so that makes sense. But specifically, I mentioned the verifier one, since many verifiers won't be storing the VC at all. So I'm wondering if that's the green column is even needed. I can see the argument for the holder storage service, less so for the verifier. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Dimitri. And apologies. I was muted when I asked you. Go ahead, Adrian. You're up next.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I understand that the role of holder and the role of issuer are separate roles. But from an authorization perspective, they could be combined in certain instances. So when we have the distinction between device-bound identity and biometric-bound identity, for example, the opportunity arises for combining the role of holder and issuer because there is no particular need for device-bound identity. And by the same token, when liveness detection is required as part of making a verifiable presentation, that also can fit into the authorization protocols in a particular way. So I asked a question or a series of questions, short questions, when the diagram first came out, which were never replied to. And I'm not necessarily expecting a reply to these two issues today as we go through the diagram. But from where I stand, where the resource owner needs to be in control of authorization policies rather than storage, that is what the way my perspective works. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Adrian. Joe, would you like to respond? And I guess go ahead because there's no one else on the queue.
Yeah, I think the slight shift in language might help me understand what you're trying to get at, Adrian. One thing is any given entity might be in any role at any given time. And even at a single point in time might be acting in many roles. But I want to distinguish that flexibility that's innate from the fact that the holder is doing things that are fundamentally differently than the issuer. So in that same dimension, any of these services could be monolithically provided, right? The storage service, the app, and the verifier service. All those could be monolithically, as I put it in one of our calls, you could Martha Stewart that all the way down, right? You could even make your own computers to run it on. But the reality is for our API, the important things to our sensibility as we were developing this is where do we provide APIs so that we can have substitutability? And so if it's important to be able to have a different verifier service with the same verifier app, which is part of the architecture that was advocated for the DHS SVIP work, right? So that the verifier app might be owned by USCIS, but the verifier service is changeable, substitutable. That's why we have those distinctions. So I don't know if that helps with your sense of how these roles might be together. Certainly an entity can have multiple roles, but we're trying to identify the roles and their distinctions so that we can define the API that enables substitutability.
All right, thanks, Joe. David Chadwick, you're on the queue. We're gonna close the conversation out probably about in 5-10 minutes. Go ahead, David.
Sorry, I'm not meant to be on the queue. I've already made my point. Did I not get removed?
Oh, sorry. And Adrian, was that? Did you put yourself back on the queue?
Yes, just to respond to Joe's comment about substitutability. I understand that substitutability is important and poses different challenges, let's call them, within a trust domain rather than across trust domains. And so when discussing issues, specifically issues around delegation or the ability to do authorization across trust domains, I think it would be very helpful to our conversation, to reaching consensus, if we would consider when substitutability, for instance, is important from a human rights perspective. In other words, the ability to substitute or bring your own device as a holder, versus when substitutability is an economic issue related to vendor lock-in within a single trust domain. They are both valid, but they are. But we need to not switch the premise by broadly using substitutability when we're talking about two different kinds of substitutability. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Adrian. Mike Prorock in the chat said he would like to hear, Joe, you go through the whole flow. I think that would be a good thing to do because I don't think you've had a chance to do that yet, Joe. Let's go ahead and hold questions while, Joe, you're at least able to get through the flow here. That means we may not be able to get to as many issues today as we wanted to, but at the same time, this is important. Would there be any objections for Joe going through the entire flow here? Okay. With that, over to you, Joe.
Okay, great. So in this case, part of the framing is this is from the supply chain use case where we do not have a human being working with a browser to drive the interaction, right? That was a key feature of how Chappie dealt with its flows. But the folks in the SVIP cohort working on supply chain don't have a holder actively driving the interactions. So we wanted to go through and model that. So in this case, the holder is just starting up their app, right? So this is the app in this case is the owner of the process from the holder side. And so that's a standalone process running on some server somewhere. On its own, so that's step one. Step two is the app, based on either a cron job or some other event that is signaling it, it's exogenous to the flow, but it knows because of its own internal business rules, hey, we need to send a VP to someone. We need to send, and we could language that in terms of we need to send a VC to someone, but ultimately it's a VP, so we kept that language. And that is expressed as a notification of data ready that is sent to the Verifier app. So that's step three. The Verifier app says, hey, we got a notification for some data ready. Do we even care about this? So that's four, evaluate the business rules. And then it is because, oh, that message came from someone that we have a business relationship with. We want to process that. And so it will construct a data ready acknowledged package. And that was just a name we made up. It's probably not what it will survive as. But that package is what goes back to the holder app to really begin the process. In particular, it has the domain and challenge for that VP. So it will identify who the verifier is, as well as provide a nonce of some kind as a challenge string. The holder app then says, hey, they're ready. Let's go get the VC. We go over and get it from where it's stored in our storage service, which could be an EDV. It could be a Mongo database. It doesn't, this doesn't care here. And then we're going to construct the verifiable presentation in the app, and then the app sends that over to the holder service to get signed. One of the things that we had a few side trails as we modeled this out is who has the keys to, for example, sign this VP. So one sensibility is these keys are precious and sacred, and so you don't want them all over the place. So shouldn't that be in a web KMS or something like that or some other key management mechanism? But as we boil down to the brass tacks, to even access a web KMS, you need to sign an invocation. So the app has to have some notion of its own keys to sign its own actions. So we felt that in this case, and we'll see it in a few other places in the other flows, that the apps need to be able to sign their own actions, right? So that's what's happening here is the holder service is capable of signing that VP, and so it does send that back to the holder app. And the holder app then submits that presentation on step 13 back over to the Verifier app. The Verifier app takes that VP and contacts its Verifier service and says, hey, can you verify this? It checks the proof and whatnot and then comes back with a verification result. I'm going to come back to that before we open the questions, but I wanted to get through this flow before I introduce that open question. So the verification comes back and you get a positive check, assuming it was positive. Then the Verifier app is going to evaluate the business rules, i.e. is this from someone we know? Do we have reason to believe this VC, etc.? And then it will just store the VC. And actually, I agree with you, Dimitri, that in terms of the API, it may not be relevant where they store it. But since we had the holder storage service, there was Ori thought it would be good to have it be symmetric between those two. And then now that the verification has happened and it's been stored, now we get 18. We get a message back to the holder app saying that, hey, we got your presentation. Thank you very much. And then the holder app, is going to record, hey, we submitted that over there. So it'll be in the logs and the audits. So what came up just, literally during this call, I realized as I was walking through this mentally, is during this verification, who's going to do this revocation status check? My current intuition is that it should be the Verifier service, and that the Verifier service is the one that has the sort of VC domain knowledge, like not the domain of supply chain, but the domain of what's a VC supposed to do. And so what kind of revocation mechanisms are supported? It seems like it would be better to have the verifier do that, since checking the status seems to be innate to verifying that a particular VC is still timely. So I think we probably need another loop in here that's going to check a revocation service, but that certainly was not the one that was distributed this morning. So, but that concludes the flow. What we don't have here are all the details about how any of these interactions might be authorized, you know, whether they're using an OAuth or ZCAP or some other mechanism. But this is the basic flow as we work through it with Ori and Mike and Eric. And with that, we can go to the queue.
Okay. Let's see. Why do we have multiple queue things? Okay. I think, I'm up, and then Tall Tet. We've got two CG bots in here. That's what's going on. Uh-oh. Two queues. All right. I put myself on the queue, so this is great. I think, steps 1 through 6, being distracted by the two CG bots. Steps 1 through 6, I believe is the start workflow use case, that we had in the use cases. If that is true, then it feels to me like this whole thing is also almost exactly the Chappie flow as well. What are your thoughts on that, Joe? Is that, did that, or have you just not had a chance to look at the full Chappie flow yet?
I think that's right. I think most of the distinction that was confusing about supply chain versus Chappie was this idea of notify data ready, going to the service. Whereas, really the sort of mapping this to the green card thing, that notify data ready is clicking, on the jobs app on the jobs website, which triggers the Chappie flow. So I do think it maps pretty closely. It's just, it was, I think, naming and languaging that was causing the disconnect.
Great. If that is reality, that is fantastic. Go ahead, Ted, you're next.
Joe, on that flow for who checks the revocation status, I think both the holder's service and the verifier service should have that, at least optionally. Because I don't want to submit a revoked, I don't want to submit a revoked, presentation if I can get a revised one to submit that's going to go through the flow.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, it's a caching dynamic, but yeah, we don't suggest, but that's pretty smart, especially if there is a refresh, capability with that credential. It would be good to catch that on the holder side.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Great. Go ahead, Adrian. I think you're next. Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe it was David Chadwick.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know if anybody's familiar with the work that's going on in OpenID Connect, but this is sort of, I can see how to map it into the OIDC flow. It would go as follows. Message number 3 would be the user talking to the resource to say, I need access to something. And then message number 6 would be the resource sending the presentation request, which would actually detail the verifiable credentials that are wanted. Okay. And then the user would retrieve the VCs, and then 13 would submit the presentation, and then 19 would say, okay, you've got access now, go ahead with the resource. So I can, the messages are different, but I can see the flow is very similar.
Yeah, that sounds right. I mean, I think part of one of the shifts here, but I don't think it's material, is the notification data ready describes the type of data to be transferred. So it's expected that what's coming back in 6, right, is the request for the data that was actually said to be ready. As opposed to an arbitrary, they could be asking for anything.
Yeah, but as I say, in OpenID Connect, it's nothing to do with the data. It's to do with the verifiable credentials. So message 6 is saying, these are the verifiable credentials or the claims that I need. So
right.
Yeah.
And in step 3 is saying, these are the claims I have available in the supply chain flow.
All right. I think, Adrian, you're next.
Quick question. In the supply chain flow, as we have the difference between a VC and a VP, is liveness detection, in the sense that we have it for authentication in general, a concept, or is it assumed when we say supply chain flow that there is no liveness detection, but only detection of the holder or the client that is approaching the verifier that is meant to be the difference? In other words, you can sign a challenge either of two ways, as far as I understand it. One of them with liveness detection, the other one is just you have the key. And I'm asking if that's different in the supply chain use case than in the general issuer use case or verifier use case.
Ori, do you want to answer that?
I answered in chat.
Yeah, so my short answer is, Adrian, I do think that is the primary difference. I kind of wish the supply chain had anchored the presentation to the current user. I liken that to the guy who's driving the truck that has the lumber in the back. But that is not how it has been fleshed out. So the problem domain that they are solving does not include that role of liveness detection.
Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to note, Joe, because I think that kind of like small scale supply chain use case of like a truck driver dropping a load off, that is the use case for like traditional human interaction, like the other API type flows that we've already kind of looked at.
Yep.
This is the case of scale, right? Where we're looking at an entirely different problem set, you know, that doesn't have that, individual level of interaction or control even with these shipments.
Yep. So hopefully that answers your question, Adrian.
Well, it is an answer. There's a difference between the supply chain use case and the general VC use case, VP use case.
That's right.
Thank you.
All right. So we're 41 minutes into the hour. Joe, what are the next steps here? I mean, this feels solid enough to go into the spec with a big warning around it to say that we're still working on the diagram, or were you wanting to make one or two more iterations before we did that?
So there are a couple more iterations I'd like to do. One is I want to put the revocation status check in here. I think it would be good to also have the refresh check. So I think both refresh feels to me it's in the same notion as the revocation. Like, we know that it's sort of an idea, but our flows don't quite show where it would fit in. Like, where would you use these functions? So I think that would be useful to add to here so that people who are learning through this API understand where those roles happen. We're working through an updated Chappie flow, again, using this language. And between the two of those, that should give us an architectural diagram that's basically an expansion on what many have called the triangle or the magic triangle or whatever of the issuer, holder, and verifier, so that we can paint a picture that has the app and the service and the verifier and how all these interact with each other. I think we're really close to having something that could go into the spec. But I'd like to do another iteration or two before we do that.
Okay, great. And thank you again, Joe. This is really fantastic stuff. And thank you, Eric and Ori and Mike Prorock and everyone else that engaged on the work. And we'll just, I think we'll just wait for you to give us the signal, Joe, on when you feel it's ready to go into the spec. And of course, feel free to do it. Just do a PR and we'll cover that PR on a future call.
Sounds good.
Is there anything else that you wanted to do around the Chappie stuff just for planning purposes over the next couple of weeks? Did you want to do the same kind of thing for Chappie, or do you feel like it's necessary, or thoughts there?
Yeah, I think it would be good to, and you know, hopefully we can do it next week, do the same sort of walkthrough and just look at the differences. I think the next big rock is to figure out how we are going to talk about authorization at these different levels. For example, you know, the way that the holder authenticates into the holder app in the typical Veris platform deployments is through an email verification loop. And so, you know, and if I'm using my ledger, then I have a PIN, right? So there are some parts here that aren't really sort of, it's not even digital authorizations or ZCAPs versus GNAP or any of that. It's, but each of these levels, we have to understand how it's being secured. So I think, let's do the Chappie workflow when I have something to share. And then I think that can flow into how are each of these message layers secured, which will get us to the authentication authorization questions that I think hopefully will get us some progress on, the issues Adrian, keeps bringing up.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks again, Joe. Let's go ahead and move on in our agenda. The next item up is pull request review. Let me go ahead and get those things up here. So pull request review. The first PR up is PR 229, which has actually been merged. This is just kind of a notification that it got merged. This was around forbidden authorization. There was agreement, and we merged that item. So we specifically call out that things like basic authentication, you just don't use it at all. So that kind of sets a precedence that we are going to talk about things that we definitely don't want people to use in the specification or just call out as warnings. Okay. The next PR that's up here is, I believe it's 230. In PR 230 is this section on authorization delegation. I think what's happened since last week is, I think, Ori, you wanted the language to be weakened to a may, and I think, Adrian, you would like the language to be strengthened to a must. And the proposed language was, you know, should, like you should be using an authorization, delegation mechanism, in the API. So that means we're kind of at a stalemate here. I don't know, I don't really know where we go from here other than this PR is just not going to be merged, unless we see some kind of movement towards, consensus. Ori, I think the question is, Ori, could you live with a should? And Adrian, could you live with a should? And if not, if the answer is no, what alternate text, that you feel would get consensus could you live with? Go ahead, Ori, you're on the queue.
I will have to object to any language that uses should to imply that someone would do something that is not technically possible for them to do. So, like, the world should use cold fusion reactors. Like, I will object to when I see that in a specification. And regarding this specific set of technology with the specific API tooling and specific documentation that we have been working together, I'm in favor of the should becoming a may, and I will object to the PR if it contains should or must.
Okay, go ahead, Ted.
Yeah, bluntly, Ori, that says that you don't understand the what the word means. We're using should in the sense of the RFC explanation that was linked a little higher up in that issue thread, which is do it unless you have a good reason not to. And a good reason not to would be that the technology that you are using for implementation does not permit you to do it. That would be a valid reason to not do the should. May is completely loose. It means that the effect of may is basically to warn the other side of an interaction that you might do something. But otherwise, we might as well leave that statement out. May does nothing. Should says do it unless you have a very good reason, and hopefully you understand the ramifications of not doing the should. It is not a must, which means that you're non-compliant if you don't do it. It is a should. It's a strong do it please, but you're not in violation if you don't.
All right. Thanks, Ted. Adrian, you're up next.
Yeah, I don't think we're ready to talk about this should, must, may issue for a couple of reasons. One of them is that we cannot reply to a human rights argument using economic logic, as we have found out in other contexts. Number one. Number two, if Ori uses something called impossible, I'm not sure exactly what is impossible, you know, in the sense that UMA, for example, we spent 5-6 years, maybe more, trying to build delegation capability onto OAuth. And I would say that the spec is out there. I think Justin is on the call. He can tell, you know, he's editor of much of it. And so I think we need to have the human rights discussion around delegation, regardless of whether it's OAuth, ZCAPs, GNAP, or anything else. The role of delegation relative to VC issuance. And once we understand that and hopefully reach consensus on, you know, device-bound identity and stuff like that, in that, you know, the relationship between delegation and device-bound identity, then we could start to have a discussion around what's possible at that point in time. So I just feel like it's premature, and I do not want to hold up work, for instance, that applies inside a trust domain or may not belong under the VCHTTP API charter or things like that. So, yeah, that's my feeling. I'll stay quiet until we can have that discussion that I think predates this on delegation.
All right. Thanks, Adrian. I just put myself on the queue to note, Ori, I think, yeah, that impossible is a stretch, right? I mean, they're standardized technologies and the ones that are pre-standards or whatever, and they're, you know, I mean, we know that ZCAPs can do this, and we've implemented that, you know, variations of that at DigitalBazaar. So the should is implementable. It is not implementable with a you know, finally approved, everything done standard. And I think, Ori, that might be your point. But at the same point, I think the counter argument that we're dealing with something that's incredibly, pre-standard right now, as well, you know, is also valid. So, I mean, you know, I think there's a demonstration that we're not going to agree on this anytime soon. Adrian, I do think the point that you're raising goes beyond the VCHTTP API. It's kind of a general, a broader discussion, that does impact, you know, the VCHTTP API. So, you know, let's move on. It doesn't sound like, we're going to come anywhere close to consensus today on the call. Keep the discussion going in the PR if you'd like. And we'll just circle back to this in the future, hopefully when all of us have, you know, a little more experience with the rest of the specification under our belt and we feel more comfortable out making decisions around this. David Chadwick, you are on the queue. You're muted, so I can't hear you, I think. Still muted, David. I see you're off mute on Jitsi, but you might have a secondary mute. Unfortunately, still can't hear you, David. So I'm going to move on. Just let us know when you're off mute, and we'll put you back on the queue. 54 past the hour. We have 6 minutes left. Section on authorization delegation, the editors will probably just shift that to a draft. And then, you know, we'll just come back to it some point in the future. Okay. Third item up was this respec auto generator from OAS files. PR. This has been merged because it was 9 days without anyone objecting. You know, based on our new, you know, merge rules, that should work. I did want to spend a bit of time just talking about what this means. So let me try and share my screen. Give me half a second to find the right tab. I think this is the right one. Okay, so can everyone see my screen?
Yep.
Okay. Thanks. This thing existed as a bunch of OAS files before the spec was written. And I think that there is a continued desire to keep the OAS files as the ground truth of what the API is capable of doing if it can be expressed in OAS, primarily because we can do automated testing if we do that. There are a variety of things, neat tools that, come with, that you can use with OAS to do automated testing. There was no mechanism to take those OAS files and inject them into a W3C specification. I wrote some code just as an experiment. So first, thanks to Dave Lane for figuring out the Webpack magic to make it work. And then two, wrote some code on top of that that hooks into respec that will pull in bits and pieces of OAS files and render them as respec. So everything that you see here, that's rendered directly from the OAS file. This is rendered directly from the OAS file. So the return codes, endpoints, descriptions, and then the schema is rendered directly from the OAS file. But as you can see, it's just a bunch of JSON and hard to read and has a whole bunch of stuff in there. So the renderer needs to be updated to make this easier to read. It's not hard. It's just, you know, some code that needs to be written. The hope here is that this is a general solution for any kind of RESTful API that we may want to do in the CCG. We have very basic tooling right now, but I'm in the process of trying to extract it into just kind of like a respec plugin. So this is just a notification that we have this mechanism now. It would be awesome if folks could help, me hack on that code. But if not, I'll keep working on it and improving it, over time. Any other questions, concerns about that before we move on? I think, Justin, you're on the queue.
Yeah, first I want to say thanks for that. That is really great work. And I wanted to point out that the existence of that tool and this group's desire to use it completely negates all arguments about OAS 3 supporting or not supporting any particular feature because we're writing our own renderer for it now. which means that we can extend it in any ways that we feel fit. And so I am not buying the argument that's been flying in chat.
Okay. Thanks, Justin. For what it's worth, I agree. Okay. And that's the last PR. David Chadwick, were you able to fight your mute button and win? We'll take silence as a no. Mute one. Okay, we're at the top of the hour. Thanks, everyone, for a great call today. Thank you, Joe, for that. Joe and Eric, Ori and Mike Prorock for that great work on the flow diagram. That makes me feel really good about the direction the group's going in. Remember, next week, Marcus, it'll be you running the call. Please send the agenda out by Sunday. There'll be largely issue processing and things of that nature. Anything else before we end the call? Any last words? All right. If not, have a wonderful rest of the week, a wonderful weekend, and we'll see everyone back here next Tuesday. Thanks all. Bye.
Cool. Cheers all.
Hello. Can anybody hear me?
Yes, Adrian, I can hear you. Hold on 1 second. Let me stop the recording.